Wisconsinite thanks Governor Scott Walker for talking about what will be a fascinating 2016 and what had to be a equally, if not more, fascinating 2015. Governor, thanks for having us in the official residence.
Thanks, great to have you back. Good to see you.
A question about both last year and this year. What did you learn running for president that will help you be a better governor, sir?
Well, two things. One, just what did I learn in general about running for president that was kind of interesting was that people all across this country are a lot more alike than you think, at least more like people here in Wisconsin. Whether obviously Iowa, because we're neighbors, but New Hampshire, South Carolina, some of the other states we visited, other than slightly different accents, people have the same issues, same hopes, same concerns. They want a strong economy. They want their kids to do well. They hope their kids, after they go off to college or technical college, will come back home. They're concerned about ISIS. They want to control their own health care. I mean, those are common things I hear day in and day out here in Wisconsin, and I hear it elsewhere out there. So I guess in some ways it makes me a better governor, just in the sense that I'm affirmed knowing that the issues that I hear day in and day here in Wisconsin aren't just in our little neck of the woods. They're people all across America sharing those same concerns.
Follow-up question. What did you learn about yourself running for president, since that's a... Very few people get that chance.
Yeah. So. Well, it's amazing what you can put your body through. I mean, I used to get about 5 hours of sleep, and sometimes you'd be running through two or three airports a given day sometimes. And so you learn you can really, if you stay in shape and you stay spiritually sound, that you can put up with all those physical demands and challenges out there. And I think that was good. It reminded me, not that I have any of those physical demands now, although I still, it's funny, excuse me, people sometimes say, oh, you know, what are you doing to yourself now? I'm like, well, instead of running from here to here to here, mm-hmm. I'm going from Green Bay to Wausau to La Crosse to Madison and Milwaukee and back again. So it's plenty of travel. It's just nice to be able to sleep in your own bed.
Yeah. Well, final question on 2015. You'd rather be right now campaigning in Iowa, wouldn't you?
Well, if the circumstances were different,
right.
I mean, the reason I suspended our campaign in September of last year was because I felt the national media had become so consumed with personality, particularly one, that they were crowding out any legitimate discussion about substantive issues. The sad truth is, I don't think it's changed that much since I made that decision. It's still largely personality-driven. The same person's still out in front. And, I mean, I'll give you a good example. How many national news stories have you seen with anybody substantively talking about what to do with the national debt? That's probably one of the most pressing issues the next president will face, and yet we don't talk about that. Instead, you talk about either personality or, you know, the 1,000th story about Donald Trump's idea about a wall, or what he said about Putin or what he said about Hillary Clinton, as opposed to what's the next president going to do with the debt deficit issues.
And then the last 24-hour news cycle, Donald Trump has surfaced the idea of whether Senator Cruz truly qualifies to be elected president. Any response to that, sir?
Well, it's just one of those examples where you just scratch your head and think. And I don't know which is worse, candidates saying things like that or the national media that feeds that. I mean, the fact of the matter is we saw it. That's why we made our effort to suspend our campaign. It was largely driven by that. It wasn't these other factors. You know, we were a campaign. The success that we had was largely driven. In fact, one of the last reports showed that 92% of my donors came from people who gave me $100 or less. So we had real grassroots support out there. But if you can't, you know, it's kind of like having a megaphone. If you don't have a megaphone, doesn't matter how potent your message is, how powerful it is, how well you connect with people, they can't hear it. And in this case, a lot of it was driven by, we didn't have to have the most, but at least we had to have somewhat of an echo chamber to get our message out. And not just for me, but I fear that for others. I think that's a huge disadvantage for the voters of America, that the media is so consumed with just one person and just largely one message.
And in terms of 4 years from now, people like you, I think the phrase is never say never, right, sir?
Well, for me, if anything, if I'm thinking about campaigns, it's less than 4 years. It would be 3 years from now. I'd look at 2018 and think, you know, Tommy Thompson was very successful in turning the state around back. In fact, in 86 when he was elected, I was going from high school into college, transformed the state, kept things going. I don't know that I would want to serve four terms, but maybe a third term. Part of what's going to determine that is one of my goals over the next year, and I've started doing a little bit of this already, is literally to go around the state and just listen to people, to hold sessions, listening to people from in big cities like Milwaukee to small towns and everywhere in between, and spend time talking about, and you know this, covering politics for so long, long term in politics is 2 years. You know, it's a 2-year legislative cycle, 2-year budget cycle, 2 years for most elections. I think we need to think 20 years out. Where do we want to be as a state in the next 15 or 20 years? And then what are the things we need to do now and in the future? And as we listen to people across the state, if I think I can add value to that after we get through this year's process of listening, that'll probably influence whether or not I run in 2018.
And then a follow-up question. In what ways do you expect Wisconsin to be better off in the next 2 or 3 years as a result of probably the things you're going to outline in your January 19th State of the State?
I think one of the big things will be how many more people are prepared to enter the workforce. When I ran for re-election, I talked about everybody who wants a job can find a job. And really the idea is more than just a job, but a career. Where we've been since then, it's interesting. Unemployment's at a 14.5-year low.
4.1.
The labor participation rate's literally one of the best in the country. We're tied for 9th. 2/3 of the people in the state are working. So the challenge, in fact, last year, according to at least two of the statistics that the U.S. Department of Labor puts out, we had, in 2015, the highest level of people working that we've had in 20 years. So significant numbers of people working, high percentage of the population, low unemployment. The challenge now becomes, it's not jobs, 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 mm-hmm. it's how to fill those jobs, jobs, jobs that matters. And so how things are going to be different in a few years, it's how much more? It's not just starting it anew, but how can we build off of the success we've already had, finding new ways to reform government, and then put those savings into education, not just as a blank check, but to say, what are we going to do to make sure that our students come out of high school are career ready? What are we going to do whether they go and do a training program, an apprenticeship program, technical college, associate degree, a 4-year undergraduate degree or beyond? How do we make sure that every one of those students is ready to enter the workforce? I'm convinced that's important, not just for career and workforce development. Increasingly, it becomes about economic development, because so many employers, every week, so many employers tell me, I have jobs open, mm-hmm. but I can't fill them. And until I can fill them, there's more work I can take on, but I'm not going to take it on unless I have confidence I can fill the jobs I have open today. So it's a twofold. It's getting people into those jobs so they're gainfully employed, supporting themselves and their families. But also, by doing that, it opens the door towards job creators creating more opportunities because they have that confidence.
Have you given some thought to something that that an assembly task force considered, some type of a realignment or merger with the 2-year colleges and the Voc Tech schools, sir?
Well, those are things I think in the next budget we'll look at, ways to be efficient and effective. I mean, I think I talked to Red Cross about this a lot, looking at everything from greater ways to reinforce and guarantee or reinforce and support a 4-year guarantee to even, for some areas, some professions, even looking at as rapid as a 3-year guarantee, all of those being ways of getting people in the workforce sooner. They also help in terms of student loan debt because less time in college means more ways to save, along with reasonable levels with tuition, like the freeze we've done the last 4 years. But also just kind of, not even just the colleges and the tech colleges, but how does high school align into each of those? How does high school align into the technical college system for those who choose those professions? How does it move? I mean, part of a potential 3-year degree program might be high school seniors taking more course options where they get credit for graduation and credit for a college degree based on competency, so they could move into those degree programs sooner as well. Those are all a part of how we need to think in a way that's new and fresh and relevant. The other day I was up at the University of Wisconsin-Stout for their 125th anniversary. Mm-hmm. January 5th, 1891, Henry Stout, who actually was the founder, who was at the time did it in conjunction not only with the college but with the Menominee School District, really had this great vision of saying we need to connect the dots. He was kind of ahead of the curve in terms of the skills gap, even back 125 years ago. That institution has always been ahead of the curve, which is why they have a placement rate of over 97%.
I see.
We need to think about that elsewhere. They tie it in with their schools. They do internships to tie in the careers. We got to make higher education more relevant, and education in general. And I think you know, the sky's the limit as far as what we can do.
You've taken credit for bold leadership. I want to ask you about three things that are being discussed in the Capitol. Number one, are you interested in state government self-insuring from a healthcare standpoint, sir?
Well, something we'll look very seriously at. I mean, 20 other states have it, including our neighbors in Minnesota, I believe, did it about a decade ago. We need to be clear that if you're going to make a decision like that, you want to make sure you know all the pluses and minuses so you're not making a change and then abruptly changing a few years later. But if there's real savings, you know, the nice thing is whether it's there anywhere else, if we've got real savings, those are, to me, things I've heard from so many people as I've listened across the state in the last few months who say, love what you did to balance the bucks, the budget here. You did the right thing, you know, needed to be done. But now we want to take future savings and we want to invest it in things like education. And so we're going to be looking going into this next budget for more ways to reform government and then plow those savings into education.
And then the other thing I want to ask about, do you see any merit in looking at abolishing the defined benefit pensions for new state government workers?
Again, I don't want to rule anything out, so we'll look at any sort of reforms out there. But as you know, Wisconsin's unique in the sense that because we have a core plan, the base is like a pension, but everything above it is essentially kind of like a 401k, so that annuitants, retirees, share in both the risk and the reward. That puts us in a position that helps us stay solvent. I mean, we're one of two states that effectively is fully funded pension. The idea, you can do that and still have that benefit, unlike some jurisdictions, whether it's cities, counties, or states, where they're all one way or the other, mm-hmm. they're all a pension, they're needing to shift it. We can have the best of both worlds. We have a solid pension base, but we're able to afford it because of the component on top of the core plan.
The corporate income tax, just for the first time, as you know, brought in $1 billion. You're not looking at bold leadership that would end the corporate income tax, are you?
Well, I'd love to get rid of every tax if I could, but
that's
I think realistically, I mean, we, for a median valued household, we've got property taxes today that are lower than they were 5 years ago. Median valued family, so a middle class family, is saving about a little over $900 from our income tax cuts over a 4 year period. Right now, again, we have additional savings. I want to continue the tax relief. I want to hold the, you know, contingency property taxes go down, hold the income tax relief. But I think going into the next budget, my priority is going to be, because it ties in with workforce readiness, is going to be putting our savings into education.
Then finally, let's go back to politics just quickly. Do you plan to endorse anybody before April 5th primary, sir?
Well, if I do anything, it would be probably at the earliest before our primary in April. But I'm not certain yet. No guarantees one way or the other. Like a lot of people in this state, I'm still up in the air, and I may wait even to decide who I vote for until that day.
Do you think Mr. Trump will be the nominee of your party? And if so, will you support him?
I think there's a high probability. But as you know, Rudy Giuliani was ahead in the polls. Howard Dean was Hillary Clinton was ahead in the polls.
Huckabee and Santorum won Iowa.
When people are ahead in the polls, it's one thing. When they actually have to vote, it's something very different. So it could change. But to me, as I said on the stage in Cleveland, I'll support whoever the nominee is, because whoever is in the running right now on the Republican side is infinitely better for this country than Hillary Clinton.
Governor Scott Walker, thanks for your time. Happy New Year to you and Tanette.
Same to you.
Thank you.